Greetings. This is a special episode of the Why Podcast featuring host Jack Russell Weinstein's conversation with Doug Hamilton, host of the Main Street Radio Show on Prairie Public. Jack is discussing his new website, philosophyisagreatmajor.com. As you'll hear, there's much to say about the practical uses of philosophy and its relevance to today's job market. Join us now for Jack's appearance on Main Street from a show airing April 24th, 2017.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and we call our show Main Street because these microphones are our virtual Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. The real ones out there are where people meet each other, say hello because we're friendly, share their news and opinions, you know, talk about what's on their minds. And today, we've got a sort of a public radio regular here in North Dakota and across the country. Jack Russell Weinstein is a professor of philosophy at the University of North Dakota and the host of a show that we carry here at Prairie Public, Why? Philosophical discussions about everyday life. It's the second Sunday of the month, and it's at 5 o'clock Central Time, so the next one will be May 13th.
That's right.
Jack, thanks for being with us today.
I love being on Main Street. It's like walking into my local coffee shop. I always know someone, and everyone pretends to be happy to see me.
Very good. Well, I'm actually happy to see you, because this is called show content, Jack. Let's start with philosophy and Jack Weinstein. What attracted you to this discipline?
You know, people often ask that, and I always summarize it in the same way. I didn't choose philosophy. Philosophy chose me. It was just something that I had done my entire life, and then when I got to college, I realized it had a name. And so –
Well, you grew up with it a bit.
I did. My father had a PhD in philosophy and mathematical logic, but he got it in 1976 at the City University of New York the day that New York went bankrupt.
Oh, yes.
And so his dissertation advisor actually said, you know, congratulations, you're fired. And then he spent about 15 years looking for regular work, working as a consultant in an organization called Philosopher for Children, which has actually been really influential in my own career. And then he eventually got a position. So it was the kind of thing like when you are the plumber's kid. Right? It's there. It's real. It's an option, but you don't necessarily think it's going to be anything in your life. And then something happens and you're like, oh, I can do this. I can fit pipes. I can clear toilets. I can weld. I can do all these things. And all of a sudden it turned out that I could do these things. I went to college to write the great American novel, and I went as an English major, and my first philosophy class, Intro to Logic, actually, I fell in love with the course. I fell in love with the teacher. And by the first day of the next semester, I knew I was going all the way.
Well, the reason we're talking with you today isn't just because of your radio show. It's because you have a new website out there that is, I encourage our listeners to visit, philosophyisagreatmajor.com. And you'll find out why Jack Russell Weinstein thinks it is. But that's an intriguing idea, because philosophy has kind of a reputation as something that, you know, people who have a lot of time on their hands thinking do.
Well, let me start with a piece of information that was one of the things that actually really inspired me. What would you think if I said to you that in 2015, 6 months after graduating with a BA, only 5% of philosophy majors were unemployed? Now, I want you to think about that for a second. Only 5% of philosophy majors 6 months after they graduate are unemployed.
But everybody's got to get a job. So what kind of employment are you talking
well,
about?
Well, the first thing is everyone thinks that philosophy majors can't get a job. So they think they're living in their parents' basement, or they think that they're living in, you know, or they're serving French fries. And in fact, philosophy majors get an incredibly wide range of jobs, from assisting in law firms, to working in bookstores, to sales, to a lot of corporate positions. Because what philosophy majors are able to do are two very, very specific skills. I mean, they have many skills that are useful, but two very, very specific skills. The first is see the perspective of someone else. And so if your boss comes in and says, I want you to do this, and you don't understand it and you don't know how to see that perspective, it's hard to do the job. But as a philosophy major, if your boss says, I want you to do this and you don't know and you don't care, it doesn't matter, because you can adopt that perspective. The other thing that philosophy majors are able to do is look at things in a very step-by-step basis. So they can break things down into logical components, see abstract ideas or hear abstract ideas, and communicate them in a step-by-step fashion. So that allows them to learn on the job. It allows them to communicate on the job. And it really allows them to speak any kind of language, whether it's the corporate language or the sales language or academic language or anything. We say on the website, philosophy is great for the first job, but it's spectacular for the fourth or fifth job.
Why don't you just call it the science of critical thinking? That might fill the classrooms a little faster.
You know, critical thinking is a buzzword that came from the 1980s, and it was used precisely for that, actually. The logic classes weren't getting the students, and so they changed the phrase to critical thinking, and it did. Every discipline teaches critical thinking, but every discipline teaches critical thinking within their discipline, right? So an English major learns critical thinking in terms of how to think about texts. An engineer learns critical thinking in terms of how to solve engineering problems. Philosophy is an umbrella discipline. It covers all the disciplines. And so what it allows you to do is have a model of critical thinking that, again, you can apply to any discipline or any area that you're in.
And indeed, the highest degree we give is called a Doctor of Philosophy because you are doing critical thinking on the edges of that discipline.
That's right. Doctors of Philosophy are degrees that show that you understand the foundations of a discipline, right? I always define philosophy as a little technical, but as the study of the fundamental assumptions of any discipline. So why does music have 12 notes? Why is it important for bridges to be plumb, you know, or beams to be plumb, right? Or why, you know, why wood instead of rock aesthetically as well as something else? And so someone has a PhD because they are at the stage of expertise where they understand not only the discipline but the assumptions and the foundations and the details so that they can innovate and so that they can be creative about their own discipline.
Well, let's apply some real world to this because UND, like the rest of the campuses in North Dakota, is undergoing cuts that are being defined by some as draconian. About a third of the state appropriation is going to go away. Philosophy might be one of those areas that is somewhat imperiled. So what you do is develop a website called philosophyisagreatmajor.com to remind people that there are opportunities here.
That's exactly right. In fact, we lost two faculty members to these budget cuts. So we're a smaller department and all the faculty who are there are teaching more classes and more students in each class. And we're faced with two things in philosophy. We're faced with the administrator skepticism that people are interested in the discipline because administrators are very practical minded. They want people to fill the seats.
Even
right?
though so, they have doctors of philosophy
that's
typically.
Right. That's right. So very practical. They're not going to support things that they don't think people are going to come to. But then there are parents who are skeptical who, again, sort of have the sense of, oh, well, my kid's going to be a philosophy major. He or she has to learn how to say, do you want fries with that? And so the Philosophy is a Great Major project, philosophyisagreatmajor.com, not a very subtle URL, was designed very specifically for people with economic concerns, designed for parents, designed for administrators to answer the question, what can my kid do or what can I do, as the case may be, with a philosophy major? And the answer is not – there's a little bit on the website about this because it's important. The answer is not explore the world, live more fully. This is important, right? And this is the standard philosophical
That's
answer.
That's a value of education.
Absolutely, and I am 100% committed to it. But this is a political problem. This is a rhetorical problem, right? It's a strategy. And so my strategy in designing the website was to say, let's just talk about jobs. And so let's look at, for example, compared to an engineering degree, right? Engineers make more money in general than philosophers. However, engineering is significantly more expensive to learn. So the rate of return in philosophy over a lifetime, how much you spend and how much you get back, is exactly the same as the rate of return as an engineering major. Now, once you say that, the whole paradigm shifts, right? Your whole thinking about it, well, the investment up front is cheaper. And, you know, with the economy and how much you want to save over time, maybe that's a better strategy. I'm not saying that people who want to be engineers shouldn't be philosophers, but people who should be philosophers or want to be philosophers, don't need to be engineers. One other thing just that inspired this, Marco Rubio in the last election made a joke. It was an aside that said, we need more plumbers and fewer philosophers. And so the internet being what it is and journalists being who they are, they did research and they found, in fact, that philosophers make significantly more money than plumbers and that philosophers have significantly more opportunities than plumbers. And so Marco Rubio was talking about this same prejudice in this sense that, oh, philosophers are useless and they're going to grow up poor, when in fact it's quite the opposite.
Why is philosophy something that we usually encounter on the higher education campus? Why isn't it part of the K-12 curriculum? It is fundamental.
I ask that question every day, and there are plenty of countries where it is. It's part of both high school education and in many countries, especially Latin American countries, part of the elementary education. And part of the reason is just sociological. It's what we think schools are supposed to do, how they manage kids. Part of the reason is in terms of training. Lots of teachers, especially inexperienced teachers, like to be in control of the classroom. And the one thing that philosophy does is bring unexpected questions and unexpected challenges. And if you are a young teacher who are a little insecure or not as experienced, or you are sort of a very OCD teacher and you want to follow the lesson plan right away, philosophy is a lot harder to manage. However, studies have shown that teaching students philosophy increases their ability to do both English language skills and math, that the critical thinking in philosophy helps with science learning and history. All this stuff is documented on the website. And so, again, the role of philosophy as a skill set means that the better young kids do in philosophy-based tasks, the better they do in all of the other subjects.
Well, let's talk about silos a bit here, because you're in the College of Arts and Humanities?
Arts and Sciences.
Arts and Sciences. And then there's a College of Education and Human Development, or a department
right.
of that. So how do you relate? Do you talk about this with those people in that department? Why aren't we teaching actual philosophy as opposed to, you know, we're practicing it all our lives, but why aren't we teaching it at that early level?
Well, you know, that too is a complicated question, in part based on what people have learned, what people want to study, what people want to teach other students. Lots of professors want to send their students to grad school in their field because it makes them feel better about what they've done. The first major actually only appears in Harvard at the turn of the 20th century. And so this notion that knowledge is divided is actually a fairly new a notion. Science used to be called natural philosophy. There was moral philosophy, natural philosophy, and either religion or logic, depending on when you're looking.
Is that because a long time ago there were fewer facts and more creative thinking about how to connect the dots?
Actually, not at all. There was as many facts, although some of them turned out to be wrong. There was as much wonder, but there wasn't a sense that universities were for training. People who were trained for jobs became apprentices. Mm-hmm. And often kids would leave the house at 10 years old and become apprentices for 7 or 8 years and then become professionals. So the universities were for the elite. The universities were often for religious leaders. The universities were for people who would end up being political leaders. And so these are all folks who had to see the big picture. And when in the 18th century, when America started and Thomas Jefferson changed the notion of what a university was, and then in the 20th century, when universities became job training, the specialization became the focus. And so part of what philosophy allows us to do is ask, what does engineering have to do not just with chemistry or physics, but also with English? What do we learn about physics from poetry? What do we learn about music from chemistry? What do we learn about business from the history of nursing? What philosophy allows us to do is bridge these disciplines so that the insights of one specialization can be applied to the other specializations, and that improves everyone's knowledge. You know, philosophy is in a certain sense the tugboat, right? It pulls the big barges together. It gets the boats into nooks and crannies. I know this isn't the best metaphor for a landlocked state like North Dakota, but what philosophy does is nudge disciplines. And that means that philosophers can be used in a wide range. Let me give you one more example. I do some consulting work in the state of Washington with a consulting organization. I do ethics workshops with consultants. I do the philosophy of consulting. Consultants are, good consultants are, the philosophers of the business world because they have to walk into a new situation where they don't have information, where they don't know the social interactions, they don't know the history, and they have to figure out how to organize people, how to get people to solve problems they couldn't solve, and how to get people to see things differently. Now, that's a good consultant, not a bad consultant. And so doing these day-long workshops with consultants about ethics and consulting has really been a dramatic experience for me to see how exactly philosophy really gets all of its tentacles into the business world. Philosophy is a very business-positive discipline. We just don't talk about it that way.
Jack Russell Weinstein is Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at the University of North Dakota and the director of the university's Institute for Philosophy in Public Life. Jack has a new website. I encourage you to visit it, philosophyisagreatmajor.com. And you'll hear the argument for this discipline in a sort of a world that seems to be interested in careers more than, you know, philosophical thinking.
But philosophical thinking is also career thinking. So, for example, the founder of PayPal was a philosophy major. The founder of LinkedIn was a philosophy major. So these grand ideas that make people billions of dollars come from a philosophical way of thinking. Now, I'm not saying that your kid ends up getting a BA, they're going to be a billionaire. Don't ask for your money back, right, if that doesn't happen. But that ability to see things in a different way, that ability to talk in a different language, this is the philosophical way of thinking because philosophy is problem solving first and foremost. I'll give you one other example. I knew a guy who knew a guy who only hired philosophers and often PhD philosophers for his sales business because he said a philosopher's job is to convince someone that he or she is right and a salesperson's job is to convince someone to buy his or her product, and it's the same skill.
But do philosophers occasionally struggle with ethics in that environment?
I would hope that everyone occasionally – because I hope everyone is profoundly ethical so they never have to struggle with ethics
Fair
in their
enough.
Job. But no, certainly, right? I mean and for those people who are in philosophy for the larger human questions, it is sometimes hard for them to think about, well, what am I going to do practically? And part of the response of this website is – in a certain sense, you have to make a choice, right? Do you want to be an academic? Do you want to be a lawyer? Do you want to be a business person? At the same time, you can bring that philosophical worldview into whatever discipline. And we had a former student named Katie who I've stayed in touch with over the years, and she was a double major in marketing and philosophy. And 5 years after she graduated, she sent me this email. Following my friend Bruno, I think that all student evaluations should be done 5 years after the course, not at the end of the course, because then you know when it's really valuable. And she does marketing webinars and problem solving for Google and for – I think she worked for Yellow Book for a while. And she sent me this email. She said, there is not a single discipline or single class that has helped me more than your philosophy classes, because her job is to have these video meetings with people she's never met and figure out how to get them to ask the right questions. And that involves her figuring out how to ask them the right questions so that they can ask the right questions.
Isn't part of this reminding people that we apply logic and ethics virtually all day, every day?
Absolutely right. And part of the issue is that a lot of disciplines have ethics components, but they have a single class. So there's an engineering ethics class or there's a nursing ethics class. And so students get this sense that ethics isn't what you think about most of the time. It's just what you think about when there's a problem. But if you think ethically, you prevent problems. And what philosophy does is integrate ethics into all things so that the problems don't come up in the first place.
You are the director of the Institute for Philosophy in Public Life. It seems to me that's what we've been talking about is part of your job proselytizing, evangelizing about philosophy.
Without a question, and it's my favorite part of the job because like talking about my daughter, I love talking about things that are important to me. And I can sell philosophy because I love philosophy, because philosophy has been very, very good to me. And philosophy has allowed me to see a world, you know. I often tell people that I grew up in New York City and I grew up around every language and every culture and every religion. But the one group I didn't know was farmers. You know, I didn't know rural people because I grew up in Manhattan. And so when I lived in Kentucky and then the Central Valley in California before here and then eventually North Dakota, the rural life was my diversity experience. And encountering farmers here, the Californians call them growers in California, I had to learn how to see the world in a different way, both because it was healthy for me, but also because I had to communicate with my students. And philosophy really allowed me to do that. It allowed me to walk into North Dakota and treat everyone with real respect as knowers, as experts, as people with real experiences that I could learn from. And I love telling people about that because I love telling people that I respect them. And I love acknowledging to other people how much they have taught me. It's one of the reasons why I do Why Radio, because Why Radio is about celebrating other people's work more than my own. And evangelizing in philosophy and selling philosophy is about celebrating other people's capabilities. What philosophy can do is allow you to maximize your capabilities so that you can present them to the world, so you can teach the world, so you can learn from the world, and you can have the life that you want.
And there are these, for lack of a better term, semi-philosophical professions out there. There are ministers.
That's right.
There are politicians.
That's right.
There are people who are trying to sell ideas.
That's right. And imagine if you are a politician and you want to communicate something really profound and complicated, like people have a responsibility that people have a right to have health care, or people have a right not to pay for health care, right? Either position. These are philosophical debates. And if you are a minister, if you are any kind of religious leader, you have to communicate these ideas. But also if you're a lawyer, right? Philosophy majors have the highest grades on the LSAT of any discipline. Philosophy majors often become lawyers. Philosophy have excellent, the highest grades. I don't know that it's the absolute highest, but it's among the highest of the GMAT, which is the medical school entrance exam. Philosophy majors have among the highest grades of the GREs. And so all of these disciplines that required pattern thinking and figuring out problems are outgrowths of that. And so anytime you want to communicate a difficult idea, philosophy teaches you the ability to communicate in a way that articulates abstract ideas in a defensive way. And what I mean by a defensive way is you anticipate people's objections in advance in your head. You have a dialogue in your head, and then you communicate based on that dialogue so that by the time people receive the information, it's already been vetted. It's already been rehearsed. And you don't have to have the unpleasantness of being attacked, or you don't have to have the embarrassment of incomplete information if those are the things that you're concerned about, because you've practiced being your own opponent. And that's one of the things that philosophy teaches from day one, how to be your own opponent. That's, of course, what critical thinking is, right? How being your own opponent and imagining objections and supporting evidence for your position so that you could present it in a more defensible and more ethically justifiable way.
And understanding something that is elemental to human behavior. We have a natural propensity to try to think through a problem. We have a natural propensity to like a smile better than a frown. So this is a way to learn better how to manage those processes within ourselves, I take it.
Absolutely right. I was driving down to the studio today, and I'm on 29, and I was thinking about how I knew when, if I'm in the left lane and I'm passing a truck, how I knew when I was past the truck, right? You know, I mean, we all eventually check the mirror, but we have this instinct that we can go into the right lane even before we check the mirror. And that's a logical process because you have a sense of how fast you're going. You have a sense of how long the truck is. You have a memory of how long you've had to wait before. You have a sense of the sound that you're not paying attention to, that you're subtly paying attention to. And when people are distracted, that's when they pull into the lane too early. And so this logical process, how do you explain this? How do you balance these things? How do you know when it's better to be safe or when it's better to be a little more daring with your driving? These are logical questions. And what philosophy does is try to map this out so that it can be refined and made better.
Well, thank you for the joy of a deep discussion.
And I appreciate it very much.
Jack Russell Weinstein is Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and the Director for the Institute for Philosophy and Public Life at the University of North Dakota. I encourage you to visit his new website, philosophyisagreatmajor.com.
You've been listening to an episode of Main Street. Host Doug Hamilton visiting with UND Professor of Philosophy, Jack Weinstein. Main Street airs weekdays at 3 p.m. Central on the Prairie Public Network or online at prairiepublic.org.